Om sahanavavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Good. Welcome back. Last week we began our study of chapter 14, Guna Traya Vibhaga Yoga, the chapter that deals with the Vibhaga, the separate understanding of the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, and we'll discuss quite a bit of that. Today we'll begin our recitation with verse 5. Repeat after me, please.
Sattvam rajas tamayati sattva rajas tam guna prakriti sambhavah guna prakriti nibadhanti mahabaho nibadhanti maha dehe dehi nam avyayam dehe dehi nam tatra sattvam nirmalatvat tatra sattvam nir prakashakamanamayam prakashakaman sukha sangena bhadnati sukha sangena jnana sangena chanagha jnana sangena rajo ragatmakam vidhi rajo ragat trishna sanga samudbhavam trishna sanga sam tanni bhadnati kaunteya tanni bhadnati karma sangena dehinam karma sangena tamas twajnana jam vidhi tamas twajna mohanam sarva dehinam mohanam sar pramara lasya nidrabhis pramara lasya tanni bhadnati bharata tanni bhadnati sattvam sukhe sanjayati sattvam sukhe san rajah karmani bharata rajah karmani jnana jnanam havrityatu tamaha jnanam havrityatu pramare sanjayatyuta pramare sanjayat rajastamas chabi bhuya rajastamas chabi sattvam bhavati bharata sattvam rajas sattvam tamas chaiva rajas tamas sattvam rajas tata tamas sattvam sarvadvareshu dehesmin sarvadvare prakasha upajayate prakasha jnanam yada tada vidyad jnanam tada vivriddham sattvam ityuta vivriddham sattvam lobha pravrittirarambha lobha pravrittiraram karmanam hashama spraha karmanam hashama rajasyetani jayante rajasyet vivriddhe bharatarshabha vivriddhe aprakasho pravrittischa aprakasho pravit pramado moha hevacha pramado mo tamasyetani jayante tamasyetani vivriddhe kuru nandana vivriddhe kuru yada sattve pravriddhe tu yada sattve pravriddhe pralayam yati deha brata pralayam yati de tadottamaviram lokan tamottamavir amalan pratipadyate amalan pratipadyate.
Very good. So, we finished the first four verses and started on verse 5. The first four, you might remember, were like a carryover from chapter 13 is pretty much true. The subject matter of chapter 13, being the three gunas, really begins with verse 5. And just to remind you, the important introduction we gave last week, if you weren't here, is that when we discuss the three gunas, we're discussing two perspectives on these three gunas that we should have before entering into our discussion today. One is, in modern times, we look upon the physical world, in fact, we look upon the cosmos as being matter and energy. These are our two categories, matter and energy. They didn't have those two categories in ancient times. They had three categories. What were those three categories? Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. That's how they looked at the world. That was their worldview. Instead of seeing the world in terms of energy and matter, energy is non-physical, matter is physical. They saw the world in terms of Sattva Guna, Rajoguna, Tamoguna, and we'll discuss the nature of those gunas as we continue. The second thing that's very important to know as we begin this chapter is that in this chapter, we're not really talking about the three gunas as manifest in the world. We're talking about these three gunas as manifest in your mind. Is your mind a part of the world? Unless you're out of your mind. Your mind is part of the world. So just as your body consists, and this again is part of the ancient worldview, just as your body consists of three gunas, in the same way your mind consists of three gunas. And that really is the discussion for the remainder of the chapter. The manifestation of these three gunas as qualities of your mind. Which means that this chapter is primarily devoted to psychology. The word psychology certainly didn't exist at the time of the Bhagavad Gita was written, but the word psychology is certainly applicable. Since psychology in modern times we understand as a study of the mind. That's what this chapter is about. It's about studying the mind. And why is it important to understand the mind? I don't remember if I quoted last class or not. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoho. Mana eva, the mind alone, manushyanam, for all people, the mind alone is the karanam, the cause, the locus of what? Bandha, of bondage, and moksha, liberation. Your mind is the locus of the problem. This is Pujya Swami Dayananda's language. Your mind is the locus of the problem. Your mind is the locus of the solution. The problem is in your mind. The problem is ignorance. You understand that. If the problem is ignorance, the solution is knowledge. Where does ignorance hang out? To use the American expression, ignorance hangs out in your mind. It exists in your mind. Where does that knowledge to remove the ignorance, where should that take place? In your mind. And it turns out then that the condition of your mind is crucial for having these teachings be effective. This turns out to be a big, big topic in Vedanta, and I don't want to go into it in great depth this morning, but some of you have been in other classes where we've discussed at great length the importance of adhikaritva. Preparedness. The point is that these Vedantic teachings are very, very powerful, but if your mind isn't ready for them, wasted. It's like you could have the best textbook on investment strategy. The best textbook on investment strategy you could have, you could study that book very thoroughly and proceed to lose thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars because you don't understand what the book is saying. You don't have the necessary preparation. It could be the best book around, but if you are not ready for it, if you don't have the necessary preparation, that book will not help you. In the same way, these teachings of Vedanta, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, are extraordinarily powerful. If our minds are not prepared, the power is wasted, so to speak. So, we focus now on preparation of the mind, and in very concrete terms, a prepared mind is a sattvika mind, a mind that has a prevalence of sattva guna, a mind that has a minimum of rajas and tamas. And these three terms, you're all familiar with these three terms. I'll define them very briefly now. They'll be defined in much more detail in the text. Tamas is a principle of darkness, of inertia, of lethargy, of ignorance. Definitely, you don't want those traits in your mind. Rajas is a principle of passion, activity, extroversion. It turns out that extrovert, and we use this term manic energy. Do you know that expression? Manic energy is like, I can't help but demonstrate. Have you ever seen someone like this? You're just talking casually, having some tea, and you observe this. I find that interesting when you see that, you know, that the foot is, I can't even do it fast because they can do it really, really fast. And how do they do that? I don't know. I can't make my foot go that fast. That's that kind of manic energy. When you see that expressed externally, what do you think is going on inside? If the foot is going like this, you can just imagine what's going on inside. That's rajas. Sattva is a principle of purity, of balance, of light. We'll see the definitions. One way that's helpful to understand rajas is in the absence of, sattva. To understand sattva, here's a simple but helpful perspective. In the absence of rajas and tamas, what's left? That's it. You, minus any remaining rajas and tamas, presuming there might be a little bit left, you, minus rajas and tamas, what's left is sattva. Okay, we began our study of verse 5, but we'll go back to the beginning of verse 5 and pick up the thread. Sattvam rajas tamayati, sattvam rajas tam, guna prakriti sambhavaha, guna pratika sam. Nibadnanti mahabaho, nibadnanti. Dehe dehi namavyayam, dehe dehi. Sattva, rajas, and tamas, the sakara drops because of rules of grammar. Iti, thus, these three gunaha, plural, these three gunas. What about these three gunas? They are prakriti sambhava. They are born of prakriti. Prakriti again, this is having to do with the ancient worldview of how the cosmos came into existence. In modern times, matter and energy came from what? If you follow all the modern science, comes from the Big Bang. So everything that exists in the universe, all matter, all energy, all traces its origin to that Big Bang. In ancient times, they didn't understand matter, energy, certainly not Big Bang. They understood three gunas. So just as matter and energy come from the Big Bang, the three gunas come from what? Prakriti, sambhava. They come from prakriti. So prakriti is the primordial source. It literally means nature, but here it's used as more of a technical term. So don't take it as nature in general. It's used as a technical term. So from that prakriti, from that primordial source from which the universe comes, from that primordial source, what came forth? Sattva, rajas, tamas, these three fundamental qualities. Which means that everything in the cosmos, physical or non-physical, it's all composed of the three gunas. Your body is made of these three gunas. Your mind is not physical, right? Brain is, look at the difference between brain and mind. Your brain weighs 2.5 pounds. How much does your mind weigh? Does it mean your mind doesn't exist? Of course it exists. It exists as a non-physical reality. We call that subtle, physical, or stula is referring to the brain. Non-physical or sukshma refers to the mind. So here our discussion is going to be about three gunas manifest not as your brain, three gunas manifest as your mind. How do these three gunas manifest in your mind? That's what we're going to talk about. First, the observation is made here that these three gunas, nibadhanti mahabaho, O mighty armed Arjuna, these, by the way, Shankara in his commentary actually goes into some depth on who is Mahabahu. Mahabahu, mighty armed, he uses, I think, the expression ajanu, alamba, the one whose hands hang down past the kneecaps. Is Mahabahu. I don't know why Shankara decides to comment on that at this point. I'm not sure why. He does. Anyway, O mighty armed Arjuna, these three gunas, nibadhanti, they bind who? Dehinam, the one who has a deha is a dehi. The one who has a body is an embodied being. Who are we talking about? You. Not your body, but the one who inhabits your body, so to speak. The one who is avyayam, unchanging, immortal, eternal. We needn't go into details. Are we talking about jivatma? Are we talking about atma? Are we talking about sukshma sharira? I don't know that that is particularly helpful in this context. We're really talking about the mind. Anyway, but we can say definitely, or what Sri Krishna says here without any doubt, is that the dehi, you, the indweller of your body, is bound, nibadhanti, they bind, the three gunas bind, they bind you, dehe, to the body. The three gunas bind you to your body. What does that mean? Isn't that like the three gunas are some kind of glue that binds you? Well, in the most obvious way, your body is made of what? Three gunas? Due to the presence of your body, which happens to be composed of three gunas, in the presence of your body, you find yourself in the body. So in a very obvious, practical way, you're bound to your body, you're connected to your body, because your body is composed of these three gunas. But now we go, actually the meaning is a little deeper than that. And we want to stay focused on psychology in this chapter, but there's a little bit of heavier Vedanta that we need to understand here. And that is, go back to that expression, prakriti sambhava. Prakriti is a word preferred by the teachers of the tradition called Sankhya. Instead of using the word prakriti, Vedantins tend to prefer the word maya. So what in the Sankhya tradition they call prakriti, in the Vedanta tradition they tend to call maya. And there's some small differences in their understandings, and I don't think we want to go into too much detail here, except to observe that maya, in the big view of things, is understood from the level of the individual as ignorance. From your individual standpoint, what you call ignorance, ajnana, avidya, from the big perspective, from the perspective of the cosmos, is what we call maya. So Vedanta teaches, the ancient rishis taught, that everything is Brahman. When you look around, is that what you see? Everywhere you look, you see Brahman? No, you see a world full of names and forms. Why do you see a world of names and forms? And the reason is, because of the presence of maya, Brahman appears as all of these various names and forms. That, just as prakriti is the source of the three gunas, that prakriti means maya, maya is also the source. Maya is identically the source of the entire universe, the source of three gunas. That maya, from the big perspective, is what you understand from your individual perspective as ignorance. I know this is a little abstract, but we're talking about Vedantic cosmology, which is a big, big topic, and And we don't want to get too far here, but just to make it, just to wrap this up and make the connection clear, this idea of bondage. Ultimately, what binds you to your physical body is ignorance. You've heard this in other contexts, right? Why do you get born? And from a very simple standpoint, you get born because you have karmas from prior lives. Why do you have karmas from prior lives? Because you did lots of actions. Why did you do all those actions in prior lives? Because you had lots of desire. Why did you have so much desire in all your prior lives? Because of you failed to understand your true nature as Satchitananda Atma. Many of you have seen in this class many times this threefold source of worldly life, avidya, kama, and karma. Just to remind you. And we'll get into our three gunas in just 2 minutes, but just to finish this, avidya, kama, and karma. This is the causal links. Why are you born? Because of past karma. Why do you have all that karma? Because you had so much desire in prior lives, which drove you to do so many actions. Why did you have all that desire? As we've discussed, if you knew your true nature as Satchitananda Atma, you wouldn't be driven by desire. Failing to know your true nature as Satchitananda Atma, you are driven by desire, which means the cause for desire is avidya, ignorance. The cause for action, the karma, is kama, desire. The cause for kama, desire, is avidya. So what is it that binds you to this body which is the result of karma? Ultimately, what binds you to this body is avidya. What binds you to your individual body is avidya. What binds this entire universe is maya. Trigunatmaka maya. This is a term that Shankaracharya uses again and again. Maya, which consists of these three gunas. Trigunatmaka maya. Okay, that's enough. Just to understand this idea of being bound to your body due to the three gunas. The three gunas bind you to your body. How do they do that? These three gunas are an expression of maya at the big level. The three gunas are an expression or a result of ignorance at your individual level. Okay, enough said. Now we can proceed. So now we're going to discuss if these three gunas bind you to your body. Now, Sri Krishna is going to explain sequentially how does sattva cause bondage, how does rajas cause bondage, how does tamas cause bondage. Tamas and rajas causing bondage makes sense. Sattva causes bondage? Huh? Yes. You'll see that in this next verse. Indeed, sattva causes bondage. How? Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat. Tatra sattvam nir prakashakamanamayam prakashakaman sukha sangena badnati sukha sanghe jnana sangena chanagha jnana sanghe. Tatra, there, with reference to the three gunas, sattvam, sattva guna. Sattva guna, which is prakashakam. Now we get some definitions now. Prakashakam, shining, bright, illumining. The brightness of your mind, sattva guna. The agitation of your mind, rajoguna. The sleepiness or dullness of your mind, tamoguna. But by the way, just the Sanskrit, tamas plus guna becomes tamo guna, rajas plus guna becomes rajo guna, sattva plus guna becomes sattva guna. Doesn't undergo any change because it doesn't end in that sa, The words that end in the sa undergo that change. Okay. So, the brightness of your mind right now, prakashakam, that is sattvaguna, also described here as anamayam. Amaya is suffering. Anamaya, that which doesn't cause suffering. Rajas, the agitation in your mind, can cause suffering. Tamas, the dullness and ignorance of your mind, can cause suffering. But sattva, anamayam, causes no suffering for your mind. And why is sattva guna prakashaka, bright, and anamaya, not causing affliction? Why? Because nirmala tvat, because it is free from mala, free from impurities. What are the impurities that sattva is free from? It's free from the impurity of rajas and tamas. What we said before, in the absence of rajas and tamas, what's left is sattva. So when your mind is purified of rajas and tamas, what remains is that sattva guna. Now, what about this bondage part? It says, sukha sangena badnati. This sattva guna, badnati, it binds. It causes a bondage. How does it cause? And again, you think, how can sattva cause bondage? It causes bondage in two ways. Sukha sangena and jnana sangena. Cha anagha. He addresses Arjuna as anagha, O pure one, O sinless one. Anagha, O Arjuna. This sattva causes bondage by sukha sangha. Sangha here means attachment. Attachment to what? Sukha, happiness. Attachment to happiness means what? Are you in a good mood? I think so. I'm in a good mood. You're in a good mood. Do you like to be in a good mood? Yeah, who doesn't? If your good mood goes away, how will you feel? Not so good. You want your good mood to come back. Why do you want your good mood to come back? That's attachment. you want, and this is, if you think about this, it's staggering. You want, you meaning everyone, you want your mind to be perpetually happy. Tell me, is that a realistic expectation? That your mind should always be happy? It's unrealistic. But isn't that what you want? Think about a two-year-old who wants there's a 1 pound package of cookies. The 2-year-old wants the whole package of cookies, right? No, you'd try to explain to the 2-year-old that's not a realistic expectation to think that you're going to get the whole 1 pound package of cookies. You can understand a 2-year-old being clueless about that, but wait a minute. The 2-year-old has an unrealistic expectation that she should have 1 pound of cookies. Do you have any unrealistic expectations? Like that your mind should be happy and content and pleased all the time? Yep. It's an unrealistic expectation. It's like expecting your body to be perfectly healthy every day of your life. Is that a realistic expectation? Utterly unrealistic. If you recognize that your body is subject to its ups and downs, is your mind any different? So then if it's unrealistic to expect your body always to be in perfect condition, isn't it equally unrealistic to expect our minds always to be happy and pleased? It's utterly unrealistic, and yet it doesn't stop us from wanting it. That's attachment. And that attachment leads to suffering. Suffering is bondage. That's what we call the life of samsara. Worldly life is a life of suffering. You are, look at this now, sattva guna binds you to a life of suffering by your expectation that your mind is always going to be happy. You want always that happy mind that causes suffering. That is sukha sangha, attachment to happiness. There's another kind of attachment caused by sattva-guna, and that is jnana sangha, attachment to knowledge. Now you think, who gets attached to knowledge? What does that mean, to be attached to knowledge? I thought when I was looking at this verse before class, I thought of the best example. Do any of you enjoy, as I do sometimes, browsing the internet, just kind of going from one thing to another and just going and looking at this and going and looking at that? What is that? What are you browsing for? Information, knowledge. And isn't that kind of, you say, well, it's interesting. Exactly, that's it. It's interesting. You get a little kick out of that. It's not, it also wards off boredom. No one likes being bored. So instead of being bored, what do? In fact, some of you, many of you have these smartphones. Instead of being bored, people do that, right? If you're sitting, you got 5 minutes, you have nothing to do. And if you're one of these phone people, I'm clearly not one, but if you are one of those phone people, you got 5 minutes, so the phone comes out, there it is. What is this? Jnana sangha, attachment to knowledge. We could broaden it. Attachment to diversion, attachment to interesting things, attachment to keeping your mind engaged and active and busy in interesting things to avoid boredom. Suppose you don't have your phone. Suppose you're sitting in a chair. Let's make up. You're at the doctor's office. You're sitting there in a chair. Suppose for whatever reason you don't have your phone. Every magazine there is some topic that you have absolutely zero interest. So the magazines are like, I don't know, free magazines. Okay, whatever the magazines are, they're all things that you have absolutely no interest. How about the problem, anything I suggest, some of you will say, oh, that sounds interesting. So I can't give an example. What would be, how about something technical? Again, any example I give, somebody is going to say, that sounds interesting. If I say something like microelectronic discoveries in 1970, two or three of you will say, Swamiji, that's an interesting topic. So it's impossible to give an example that will work for anyone. The point is, you're sitting in the doctor's appointment. You don't have your phone. There are no magazines. There's nothing to keep your mind occupied. There's no TV. There's no radio. There's no nothing. You're just sitting there. And there's no other person in the waiting room. Just you. You're just sitting there. And just sitting there. And just sitting there. Many people get uncomfortable. Certainly you get bored, but more than bored, you can become uncomfortable. Why? Your mind is not distracted. That is jnana sangha. You're attached to some kind of distraction, attached to some kind of interesting involvement for your mind. These are two ways then that even sattva guna gets you in trouble. It causes bondage by causing attachment to having a perpetually good mood and having your mind always engaged in some kind of interesting activities. By the way, if you're thinking about, Swamiji, don't we want a sattvika mind? Yes, we want a sattvika mind, but that's the means to the end. That's not the goal. The goal, we'll see later in a chapter, is actually to be guna atita, beyond the three gunas. So don't get confused. Sattva guna is definitely desirable and important, but it's not the goal. It's a means to the end. When you have a sattvika mind, you can gain knowledge. You can gain the spiritual wisdom. You can become enlightened. For that reason, this sattva guna is desirable, but from a very day-to-day sense, we acknowledge that even sattva guna causes bondage. If sattva guna causes bondage, what do you think of rajas and tamas, right? Okay. Rajo ragatmakam vidhi, rajo ragatmakam trishna sanga samudbhavam trishna tannibadhnati kaunteya tannibadhna karma sangena dehinam karma sang. Rajas is ragatmikam vidhi. Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, O Arjuna, vidhi. You should understand this. O Arjuna, vidhi. Understand this. Understand what? That rajoguna, is ragatmakam. It is of the nature of raga. Raga means what? Desire would be the simplest meaning of raga. Of course, raga, we're accustomed to hearing the words raga and dvesha together. Raga means desire. Dvesha often translated as aversion. So desire and aversion. But in a manner of speaking, raga and dvesha are expressing the same principle. Raga is a desire to get something. Dvesha is a desire to get away from something. Raga is positive. Dvesha is negative, but they're the same thing. Like you have positive and negative charges of electricity, but they're both electricity. If it's a positive charge or a negative charge, they're both electricity. In the same way, raga is a desire to get something. Dvesha is a desire to get away from something or avoid something. They're both desires. So ragatmakam rajas. Rajas is of the nature of desire. Of course, raga has many other meanings. Shankara explains the root meaning, which is a little interesting. The root meaning, raga, comes from the root ranj. The root ranj really means to color something. So like cloth is dyed, cloth is colored. So then why would raga be used to mean desire? Raga is that which colors your mind. In modern times, we use the word mood. Mood is definitely a coloring of the mind. In this case, raga, when your mind is colored by desire. That's kind of the root meaning of it. So, ragatmikam, rajas. Rajas is of the nature of raga, of desire, and more broadly speaking, everything associated with desire. In fact, we'll see that as it continues. Trishna sanga samudbhavam. That rajas is samudbhavam. It is born of what? Sangha, connection to what? Trishna. Trishna means literally desire, longing, thirst. So rajas is of the nature of desire. It is born due to being connected to thirst, Trishna. So you can see the focus on desire. Excuse me. Tat nibadnati, breaking the words apart, tat, that one, that rajas, nibadnati, it binds who? Dehinam, the embodied person. Who's the embodied person? You. It binds, rajas binds the embodied person, how? Karma sangena, through karma sangha. Prior verse, we talked about sukha sangha, attachment to happiness. We talked about jnana sangha, attachment to knowledge or interesting things. Now we're talking about karma sangha, attachment to karma. Karma in a sense of activity, action. What is the connection between rajas and karma? What the connection between desire and action? Pretty obvious, right? when you want a cup of tea, when you have a desire, when you have raga for a cup of tea or trishna for a cup of tea, what do? Depends. If it's like me, what do? You go and get a cup of tea. But some of you, you have this other technique. What is that? Are suno. If you want a cup of tea and your spouse is around, you call, you chai bano. You call out to your spouse and you ask her to make some tea. But even calling out to your spouse is still an action, right? So the point is that desire leads to action. Isn't that what we put up on the board? Kama leads to karma. Desire leads to action. So if your mind is filled with rajoguna, your mind is filled with desires, when your mind is filled with desires, are you just going to sit there? Or are you going to get up and do something to fulfill your desires? And suppose you're prevented from fulfilling your desires. Suppose your spouse is not at home. You have no one to ask to make you a cup of tea. And suppose that for whatever reason, you're kind of allergic to going into the kitchen and doing all of that stuff. Then what happens? You sit without your cup of tea, and how do you feel? How do you feel when a desire goes unfulfilled? You're a little unhappy. This is suffering. This is how rajas causes bondage. Rajas creates this expectation that you're always going to be able to act in such a way that you can fulfill your desires. Is that a reasonable expectation? Two problems. Accepting the fact that there are desires, we have two problems now. One is, are you capable of fulfilling every particular desire? We don't have the power, we don't have the shakti, we don't have the resources of fulfilling all those desires. No matter how hard we try, sometimes desires are beyond our reach. Secondly, how many desires do you have? You'll never count them all. Because as you count them, then more keep coming and keep popping up. So you can't count all these desires. If you can't count all the desires, how will you ever imagine fulfilling them all? So look at the defect of using karma to fulfill your desires. And what a fundamental assumption. We all have that assumption. Yeah, I have a lot of desires. I'll work hard and fulfill those desires. It sounds good on the surface, but with some investigation, you see, it's a terrible philosophy of life. If you think you can, well, I remember when I was a young man, I remember having this thought. Young means in my 20s. 20s, I don't know how you were in your 20s. For me, in my 20s was a time of maximum stupidity. I thought I knew everything. I knew nothing. Just terrible. Anyway, I hope that wasn't true for you. It was true for me. All right. I remember thinking that all I had to do was work hard enough and smart enough in life, and I could accomplish anything. Not unusual for a 20-something to think like that. But most of us are a little bit beyond the 20s. When you look back on that 20-something thought, all I have to do is work hard enough and smart enough, how does it look now? Looks pretty naive. All right. But that applies to absolutely all actions in life. So that's what this verse is talking about. And that is that the presence of rajas leads you, rajas means desire. Desire compels you to act, but acting, performing karma for the sake of fulfilling all your desires is in the long run hopeless. You will never gain contentment by working hard or smart to fulfill all your desires, but your dependence on action, karma sangha, your dependence on action to fulfill your desires will cause you to suffer. And in that way, karma sangha, the attachment to action, is what causes the bondage, and the source of that bondage is what? Rajas, rajoguna. All right. Tamas, we can expect tamas to be a problem. Tamas twajnanajam vidhi, tamas twajnanajam mohanam sarvadehinam, mohanam sarvadehinam pramaralasya nidrabhis, pramaralasya tannibadnati bharata, tannibadnati. Bharata, O Arjuna, O descendant of Bharat, is who is Bharata. O Arjuna, vidhi at the top. Again, please understand. O Arjuna, vidhi. Understand this. Samjho, some of you would say. Understand this. Understand what? Understand tamas too, but. On the other hand, tamas. What about tamas? Tamas, vidhi. You should understand that tamas is ajnana jam, born of ajnana, born of ignorance. In fact, tamas is ignorance. Born of ignorance, it is ignorance. It is mohanam, that which causes confusion and delusion, is mohanam. It is mohanam sarva dehinam, for every embodied person. Sarva, every, dehinam, for all of those who have bodies, which means for all of us, that tamas is mohanam, the source of confusion, the source of delusion, the source of wrong thinking. We'll see that in the second part of the verse. That tamas, tat nibadnati, tat, that tamas, nibadnati, causes bondage means causes suffering, ultimately. Causes bondage and suffering how? Pramada alasya nidrabihi. Due to these three factors that by which tamas causes suffering. Actually, we have to take the word sangha from the prior verse. That's a common in Sanskrit verses. Sometimes you have to you kind of imply a word. So we have to go back to the prior two verses, pick up that word sangha, and apply that word here. So how does tamas cause suffering? Due to sangha, we apply that verse from that word from the prior verses. The sangha to what? Attachment to what? Attachment to pramada, first of the three. Now, pramada, I translated here as negligence, but I think in this context, a better translation for pramada really is ignorance or error. It has those meanings. It has many meanings. Negligence is one of many meanings. But ignorance or error are also important meanings of pramada, and I think they apply here. Attachment to error. Huh? Who wants to be attached to error? Lots of people are attached to error. Just to just an example from the news reports that we hear each day, and really depressing news reports we hear each day of the war between Palestine and Israel. Why is Israel bombing the heck out of the Palestinians? Error. Wrong thinking, right? Pramada. Why is Palestine continuing to lob these rockets into Israel? Error. Ignorance. Due to ignorance, Israel continues to bomb Palestine. Due to ignorance, Palestine continues to bomb Israel, and in the meanwhile, thousands of people are dying. How ridiculous is that? So you might wonder, why don't they just stop? We wish they would. Why doesn't Israel stop? Attachment to error. Why doesn't Palestine stop? Attachment to error. They have their they've made certain conclusions. The conclusions are erroneous. Pramada. But the fact that the conclusions are erroneous doesn't mean they're going to let go of the conclusions. They're committed to those conclusions. They're holding on to those conclusions. This is Sangha, attachment to error. And by the way, you don't have to be in Israel or a Palestine to be committed to error. How many times have you heard someone say, "Don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing." When somebody is challenged and they reply like that, "Don't tell me what to do, I know what I'm doing," chances are that they are attached, they are holding on to some wrong perspective, some wrong understanding, they're holding on to some kind of error. And how Israel and Palestine is just such a powerful example of this, how tightly they hold on. And what are they holding on to? Error, pramada. So due to this pramada, due to attachment to pramada, you are bound to suffering. And with regard to everyone, when you are committed to your own ideology, your own thinking, your own conclusions, and some of those conclusions are not correct, but when you hold on to that, you cause suffering. And you cause suffering not just for yourself, you cause suffering for others. So Israel causes suffering for not just for Palestine, Israel causes suffering for Israelis. Palestine causes suffering not just for Israelis, Palestine causes suffering for Palestinians. So this is how, when we hold on to error, we cause suffering for ourselves, we cause suffering for others. So pramada, how does tamas make you suffer? Due to attachment to error, pramada, not just error, but alasya. Alasya, usually laziness. Attachment to laziness. You're sitting in chair and somebody says, would you mind getting up and doing this and that and the other thing? And your response is, "Okay, I'll do it tomorrow." Tomorrow you're asked the same thing. "Would you mind doing this and that and the other thing?" "Okay, I'll do it. I'll get around to it. I'll take care of it." What happens? Never gets done. Why is it not being done? It's part of your response. The reason you're being asked is it's probably your responsibility to help out in some way. Why are you not helping? Why are you not fulfilling your responsibility, your dharma? Why not? Alasya. That's laziness. You're attached to laziness in those situations. You don't care about it. You don't want to do anything about it. That is attachment to laziness. Causes suffering for, actually, obviously, causes suffering for whoever is asking you for help. Causes suffering for you also. And you understand that you are failing to fulfill your responsibility. Do you think that might have some consequence? When we fail to fulfill dharma, we suffer, we ourselves. Other people will be affected, but when we fail to fulfill our responsibilities in the long run, we will bear the consequences for those wrong actions. You know that very well. So due to attachment to pramada, error, tamas causes suffering. Due to attachment to alasya, laziness, tamas causes suffering. And finally, attachment to nidra. Who isn't attached? Sleep. You know, the alarm clock goes off. If you could, you would turn off that alarm clock and go back to sleep and just ignore it completely. If the consequences were not so bad, you would ignore the alarm clock. Anyway, sleep is something everyone likes. Sleep, it's comfortable, it's a state of contentment, it's natural that people like sleep. but when you're attached to sleep. That's what we're talking about here, sangha. Attachment to sleep means what? It means you're reluctant to get out of bed and fulfill your responsibilities. And when you fail to get out of bed sufficiently early to fulfill your responsibilities, you are causing suffering for yourself and others. So this is the third way that tamas causes suffering, that tamas causes bondage, the badnati. Tamas causes bondage how? Due to attachment to pramada, error, to attachment to alasya, laziness, and nidra, sleep. All right, next verse summarizes what we've just seen. Satvam sukhe sanjayati, satvam sukhe rajas karmani bharata, raja karmani bharata. Jnanam avrityatu tamaha, jnanam avrityatu pramade sanjayat yuta, pramade sanjayat. Sattvam, sattvaguna, sanjayati, it gives birth to, it causes. What? It's a cause for what? Sukhe, for sukha. Sattva gives rise to sukha, happiness, which is a good thing. Remember, we said that it causes bondage. That's absolutely true. But it causes bondage to what? Sukha. So, but the fact is that sattva causes sukha to the extent that your mind has sattva guna. To that extent, your mind will be happy. Which means what? To the extent that rajas is present in your mind will not be happy. To the extent that tamas is present in your mind will not be happy. So, sattva gives rise to sukha. Raja, rajaha, rajas, gives rise to what? Karmani. It is the cause for action. Just as sattva is the cause for sukha, in the same way, rajas is the cause for action for all the reasons we just described. And finally, tamaha. Tamas, jnanam avritya, avritya, having covered jnanam, knowledge. Tamas is ignorance, right? So that tamas, having covered, having overwhelmed your knowledge, your understanding, your wisdom, sanjayati uta, sanjayati, it causes, it gives rise to what? Pramade, for pramada, for ignorance, for error. So sattva gives rise to sukha, happiness. Rajas compels you to act. And tamas leads to error. All right. That summarizes what we've just seen. Now, having summarized that, this next verse is very... Now we get into... This is so far it's mostly definitions and so forth. Now we get into the sum of the psychology. This really is a chapter on psychology. You'll see that coming in this next verse. Rajas tamas chabi bhuya, rajas tamas chabi, sattvam bharati bharata, sattvam bhavati bhara, rajas sattvam tamas chaiva, rajas sattvam tamas, tamas sattvam rajas tata, tamas sattvam rajas. Rajas, tamas, abhibhuya sattvam bhavati bharata. Bharata, Arjuna, sattvam bhavati, sattva guna bhavati exists, arises. Sattva guna is prevalent in your mind when? When abhibhuya, when something is overcome. Abhibhuya, having overcome what? Rajas and tamas. Rajas, tamas, abhibhuya, when rajas and tamas are overcome, overpowered, predominated over. When sattva predominates, when rajas and tamas are reduced, sattva bhavati, sattvaguna is prevalent. On the other hand, when rajas, oh, here we have to bring that abhibhuya down. So just as sattva predominates when rajas and tamas are overcome, look at the third line, rajas predominates when sattva and tamas are overpowered. And finally, tamas, in the fourth line, tamas prevails when sattva and rajas are overpowered. Now it's starting to look like a psychology book. And that is to say that the nature of your mind depends on the balance of these three gunas. Each of the three gunas can be present to a greater extent or a lesser extent, and that will determine the condition of your mind. This happens to be actually the basis for a very important... I find it interesting that everyone likes to talk about these four varnas. I use the word varna because the word caste is not a Sanskrit word. Did you know that? When people talk about the four castes, the word caste is not a Sanskrit word. Does anyone happen to know what language the word caste came from? I heard somebody say correctly. The word caste is a Portuguese word. It is. How did that come into the Indian vocabulary? Well, Goa, so forth, the Portuguese colonies that started up in the, I think, 17th century, whenever they started up. So due to the presence of Portuguese in India. Anyway, there's a connection between the relative presence of these three gunas to the four varnas. Let me show you. You may have seen this before. It's nice to see. And it explains kind of like the psychological nature of these four groups of people. Suppose we talk about the relative strength of each of the three gunas. Suppose, as the first verse says, that sattvam bhavati raja rajas tamas cha abhibhuya, rajas and tamas being suppressed. What is number one then? Sattva guna. Rajas and tamas are suppressed. So we'll put it like this. Sattva guna is prevalent. Rajas is less. Tamas is still less. Well, there's a traditional understanding that this describes the mind of a brahmana. So you're not a brahmana because you're born in a particular family. This is a traditional teaching that says you're not a brahmana because you're born into a particular family. You're a brahmana when, if sattva is prevalent in your mind, and rajas and tamas are less. Now, what's another possibility? What is the third verse? Raja. Rajo bhavati. Rajas will exist when sattvam and tamas are repressed. So let's see that. When rajas predominates, because sattva and tamas are repressed, look at this. We're talking about somebody who is very active, rajas, but their activity is mostly directed in a sattvika manner, in a manner that's helpful to people, helpful for mankind. We're defining a kshatriya, one who acts on behalf of others, to help others, to protect others. Really, that's the idea of a kshatriya. So this would be the second case when rajas is prevalent. Of course, there's two possibilities. So rajaha bhavati, rajas is there because sattva and tamas are repressed, but they could be in the other order too. So you could have rajas predominant with tamas in a secondary condition and sattva the least. So what does this suggest? Someone who's very extrovert and active, but instead of being extrovert and active in a sattvika way for the sake of others, they're extrovert and active for kind of a selfish thing. They're taking care of themselves more. More selfish in orientation. This would then describe the mind of a Vaishya. So again, you're not a Vaishya by the family you're born into. You're a Vaishya if Rajas is predominant and Tamas is in second place. And finally, you can imagine the end condition, the lowest condition, is when Tamas is predominant. When Tamas is predominant, it's not likely that Sattva would be in second place. So we would guess then that Rajas would be in second place and Sattva Guna would be in third place, and this is the Shudra. So therefore, the Shudra is not one born into a particular family. A Shudra is one whose mind is dominated by Tamoguna. This is quite traditional, and it really shows how this thinking of these four varnas being determined only by birth, you can see how inappropriate that is. It's so narrow and absolutely inappropriate. Anyway, this then talks about psychology. So notice that these four varnas are defined in terms of their psychology, in terms of the nature of their mind, in terms of which gunas are prevalent and which gunas are repressed. So we'll, in our next class, we'll see much more about this. Couple of important announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our usual satsang at 6:15, nice question-answer format. And if the weather is nice, we'll sit outside in the garden. We've had a lovely time in the past weeks. Satsang 6:15 tomorrow. 2 weeks from today, we're going to be celebrating Krishna Janmashtami. We have a nice celebration planned. So plan on joining us 2 weeks from today. If you're planning on coming and would like to bring a dish of food, there's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. Many of you noticed that in the lobby, we have a lot of surplus books that we cannot use in our library because we've already got the books or they're not appropriate for the books. Vasanti has organized to put them out on shelves, and you are most welcome to take any of those books and make use of them as you will. They're all surplus books. The library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.